The PC gave us computing power at home, the internet connected us, and mobile let us do it pretty much anywhere. Now generative AI lets us communicate with technology in our own language using our own senses. But figuring it all out when you're living through it is a totally different story. Welcome to Leading the Shift, a new podcast from Microsoft Azure. I'm your host, Susan Ettlinger. In each episode, leaders will share what they're learning to help you navigate all this change with confidence. Please join us. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
My guest today is Arthur Geese. He's here to talk about his review of Headlander. My name is Justin McElroy, and you're listening to Polygon's Quality Control. Hey, Arthur, welcome back to the program.
Hello.
I think before we get right into Headlander, I'd like to talk a little bit about your sort of general stance on Double Fine, where you think they've succeeded, where you think they've failed in recent games. I think they're a fascinatingly sort of uneven studio. For instance, I think Broken Age is really cool and neat. I thought Costume Quest 2 was one of the more boring things I've played. And I thought Trenched was great, too, or Iron
you
Brigade.
You mean Iron Brigade.
Yeah, depending on how you want to slice it. My cat's busting into the room to demand food. Where are you at with Double Fine? What's sort of where are the highlights for you?
I mean, I think that like a lot of sort of old, like middle generation Double Fine fans, I sort of miss when they could do the bigger stuff. Like obviously, like Psychonauts is sort of my favorite Double Fine game. I think that they've had an interesting history since Brutal Legend sort of tanked of doing things fast, of failing or succeeding quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense from a business perspective. I think that's the right move for them. I think that it does lead to a sort of sense of things being undercooked.
Sure.
I think that there's a lot of really cool ideas in their games that don't get explored enough or very clearly, and that can make them kind of forgettable in the playing, if not the writing. Like, I thought stacking was a cute idea and didn't really dig it. I thought Iron Brigade's mechanics were good, but I didn't think that the game design was particularly interesting. It's just like wave-based survival stuff. Broken Age was gorgeous. It was very much a sort of old-school adventure game. The Double Fine Adventure was kind of not received overwhelmingly well. I think that generally they've been pretty inconsistent, like you said. And so that sort of colored my expectations going into Headlander. Like, I expect a Double Fine game to be a little mechanically shaky and funny to sort of distract from that.
Talk to me a little bit about the core mechanic, because it's interesting. It sounded to me, the uninitiated, a little bit like stacking, which is another Double Fine game that I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that stacking was a much slower game that required a lot more backtracking, and the perspective sort of complicated things. The way that Headlander works is you are the last human in the universe, except you're actually only a part of a person, specifically a head in a rocket-powered helmet that can interface with robot bodies. Mm-hmm. So as the Headlander, I guess, I don't know, That name never comes up in the game that I remember. You can pull the heads off of robots and take over their bodies. And it also means you can interface with certain computer systems and take control of them. And so the way that works is that, for example, doors can't be gone through as just a head. Like, the security won't open. So you need at least a body to walk through them. And as security increases, you need a scaling sort of set of colors of body to go through those doors. And Headlander actually pretty smartly navigates a puzzle system based around this idea, combined with the idea that the lasers that these security robots fire, which are called Shepherds, bounce. And so it becomes a puzzle of navigation that isn't just getting somewhere. It's getting a body somewhere, getting a laser somewhere to where you can get through it, even if the body that you're in can't.
Mm-hmm.
So
what variety, what kind of variety of bodies are there, and how sort of different does each one feel?
So there are, numerically, I'm feeling a little challenged right now. There's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet security. And within those there's a couple of, special bodies in one part of the game that are black and white, that adhere to chess piece mentality. So their lasers, like I think the knight's lasers, will only go in a 90 degree angle. So they fire out forward a bit and then tilt directly upward. There are enforcer bots, which don't have lasers, but punch really hard and have, insulated tires to go over electrocuted floors. Sorry, I'm
electrified.
Electrified is the word I'm looking for. Yeah, so that you can go over electrified floors. And so there's a fair bit of strategy in the kind of body that you want, in knowing that you don't have the body that you need to get where you need to go yet. So there's a decent amount of variety there, and it's also, it is both gated by color, which means that occasionally you can't go somewhere because you haven't found a robot to take there yet, and also by ability, which means that, like action adventure games like Metroid, you need to get certain upgrades to your head in order to get through these spaces. Mm-hmm. So it's gated in that way in a couple of different manners.
Talk to me a little bit about the combat, because it seems like, it looks maybe on the surface, and as you describe it from the controls, is sort of a 2D sort of action platformer kind of thing. But in practice, it almost looks a little bit like one commenter compared it to a Flashback or Out of This World. So how does that shape up?
I could see that comparison. I think that it also sort of looks like those PC freeware era games like Abuse. In that you're aiming with the mouse or the right analog stick, if you're using a controller like I did, and firing. And if you hold down the left trigger, then you get an aiming line. So you see exactly where your shots are going, which also allows you to see how your shots will bounce. Combat tends not to be twitchy. It tends to be very methodical, because you can destroy a robot body if you shoot it enough, but you also can't occupy a robot body that you destroy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit a robot's head once or twice, it'll just pop right off. And you can also fly over in head form. You can detach from your body and fly over to another body and steal that head while it's hostile to you. And more powerful robots will defend themselves more effectively against that. But one-on-one, you'll be able to take any robot's head off and take that body. There's a rudimentary cover system. And also just being on a platform that they can't hit and bouncing lasers off is a big part of the sort of combat sensibility of the game. So it's definitely more strategic than I think it might look at first glance.
Arthur, I want to hear more about Headlander, but I need to take a quick break to talk about Casper. Arthur, how you sleeping?
You know, all right.
You know, you could be sleeping better if you were to pick yourself up a Casper mattress. These are astounding. They're a miracle of modern science, I would say, because they are mattresses that match, if not surpass, the quality of the mattresses you're going to get in a big mattress store. But they're doing it for half the cost, and for me, most impressively, half the size. It comes in this tiny box, no bigger than a shoebox, really. Well, it's much bigger than that. That was a lie. But it does seem very small for a mattress. You zip it open, and suddenly the mattress is expanding, and you're ready to sleep on what I think is arguably the most comfortable mattress you will ever sleep on. We have one in our guest bedroom, and I'm jealous of our guests every time they come and sleep there, because they rave about it every time. Time magazine called it one of the best inventions of 2015. It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. You're going to pay like $850 for a queen, $950 for a king, $500 for a twin-size mattress, which is so much less than in stores. There's free shipping returns to U.S. and Canada. And here's the best part. You can try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they pick it up and refund you everything. And get this, it's made in America. If even at those low, low prices, we can do you one better. If you listen to Quality Control, you're going to be able to get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/control and using offer code CONTROL. Terms and conditions apply. So casper.com/control, get $50 off an already shockingly well-priced mattress, and you are really, really going to enjoy it. I guarantee you that. Arthur, talk to me for a second about the humor and sort of tone of this game, because that's obviously a big hallmark of some Double Fine games more than others. I would argue it's something they kind of have pulled away from a little bit in recent years. But what's the tone of Headlander like?
I think the thing that you have to look at immediately is just the aesthetic of Headlander, which is this sort of interesting combination of sci-fi tropes from a few different periods. Like the 50s, 60s, and 70s all had their own very sort of distinct kinds of science fiction visual and just sort of pop culture motifs. And Headlander kind of borrows from all of that. Like, a lot of the robot design and the head design feel very reminiscent of monster movies and sort of space exploration movies from the 50s. There's a lot of sort of psychedelic influence from late 60s genre stuff, and a lot of sort of interesting graphical touches that you see in stuff like Silent Running and Logan's Run from the 70s. So there's this interesting kind of combination there that I think is really effective. But as far as humor goes, there's lots of sort of castaway jokes and goofy bits of dialogue from the robots, and the premise is obviously ridiculous.
Sure.
And there's a lot of sort of sight gags about, look, you stole this body, or regardless of what gender the head is that you pick, and you can pick either male or female, and there are a few different skin colors available when you start. You will take bodies of female and male gendered robots, and it will occasionally make a joke of that. And at one point, there's actually a sort of mild game mechanic tied to the gender of the heads that you're looking at. And so I think that there are attempts for it to be funny. Like, I think it wants to be funny. I just don't think that it puts in the work. I don't think that its structure is particularly benefited, is suited to humor, because you have a silent protagonist that it makes a joke about multiple times because you don't have lungs. So how could you speak? And there are sort of voices of God, both in your corner and against you, with Earl, which is a mysterious benefactor, and Methuselah, who's the mysterious antagonist, sort of saying lots of things, but the writing just never quite gels into something that's consistently funny. It's frequently smile a little bit funny, but never laugh out loud funny.
I'm interested in something, Arthur, because you're the reviews editor. You obviously decided to review this one yourself. How did you decide on that? How did you think, hey, this is something for Arthur?
Well, I was available.
So that's good. Helps. That's always a plus.
You know, a lot of people are on vacation.
Yeah.
And so that sort of limits the people that we can assign to. You were working on another game, for example.
Yeah.
And other than basic availability, which is sort of like the unsexy practical nature of our jobs, I think that I like a lot of Double Fine stuff. I think I'm inclined to like some of Double Fine stuff, but I also think I'm more than capable of being critical of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of game that it is something that is in my wheelhouse. Like, that sort of action adventure genre stuff is something that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I just reviewed Song of the Deep, which is sort of a slightly different take on that same Metroid base. So, you know, I think that I felt qualified to approach it, and I was moderately interested. I think Adult Swim has been publishing a lot of very interesting stuff, and during this time of year when there's not as much in the way of larger sort of world destroying titles to check out, the Headlander seemed interesting. So it was a sort of confluence of events that made it so that I would be the one to review it.
How well does it nail the sort of, it's obviously going for an aesthetic that's sort of a retro sci-fi vibe. How hard does it lean into that, and how well does it nail it?
I think pretty well. There's a lot of sort of chromatic aberration to simulate CRT distortion, which I feel like is sort of a big thing right now for retro sci-fi references. Mm-hmm. I think that the art style is very consistent. There are visual effects that simulate film grain and sort of like over sharpening that elicit a very specific kind of look that reminds me a lot of posters, like sci-fi book covers and posters from the 60s and 70s, which feels very deliberate. I think that the music works pretty well as something that evokes that era, like that weird 70s era sci-fi music that Jack Wall obviously referenced in the first Mass Effect to very strong effect. No pun intended. I think that in that regard, all the aesthetic choices that it makes work really well. It does what it needs to have a very clear visual design in a way that not every Double Fine game that's not on the scale of something like Broken Age manages to achieve, which is kind of a shame because it's expensive to do that. And Double Fine isn't making AAA games most of the time now. They're making smaller budget experiments. And Headlander feels much more polished in that regard.
This is you estimated about 6 or 7 hour time of experience. Is it something you think would be worth returning to? Would there be added value from playing through this again, or is there pretty much one size fits all kind of thing?
There are a minimal number of side quests in the game, though I didn't have time to do all of them, so I could conceivably go back and do those. And there are rooms that I didn't find or open, and those are tracked, like the game tracks your completion percentage. So I think that, thankfully, once you finish the sort of final sequence, it puts you back into the game, and you can kind of wander around and see slight changes in the way that people are behaving now that things are different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not uninteresting when you finish it, but I think that it actually, for the runtime that I played with it, it managed to consistently elaborate on its mechanics in a way that was interesting. And I think that it said just about everything it had to say in that amount of time, which is something that a lot of games don't actually achieve. They run out of things to say, or they add too many things and never really have time to elaborate on them.
Cool. Well, Arthur, is there anything else you didn't touch on? Anything else you'd like to hit before we sign off here?
I think that the thing that I touched on in my review that was kind of surprising, and we touched on it a little bit here, is just that I was surprised by Headlander because, like I was just saying, from a design and mechanics perspective, it's extremely solid. Like, it's very sound. It doesn't get in its own way the way that a lot of sort of smaller games do. And I think that after playing a game like Song of the Deep recently, which I think had some of those problems, and a lot of games, just generally speaking, that kind of trip on their own feet and get in their own way, that Headlander was kind of surprising in that it never really had that problem. Like, the puzzle solving and combat scenarios don't feel stupid, but they don't feel especially punishing, with the exception of a boss fight at the end of the game. And other than a sort of lack of tutorializing on where certain very important upgrades will come from, it's a game that feels very interested in you playing it and like seeing it and not getting lost in it and actually getting it done.
Cool. Well, Arthur, thank you so much for joining us. Again, thank you to Casper. Go to casper.com/control. Use the offer code control and save $50 off a great mattress. We got a lot more stuff for you on polygon.com, including a review I wrote for Quadrilateral Cowboy, which is very interesting. Did you play that, Arthur?
I played a little bit of Quadrilateral Cowboy. I think that, to speak to its authenticity, I broke my first game because I tried to change the color of my screen of my deck and couldn't change it back. So I had to start the game back over again. So it feels very authentic to the DOS experience.
It's a Nuzlocke run Quadrilateral Cowboy. You can't see what you're typing. There's a lot more for you there. If you get a second, please head over to iTunes and leave us a rating or review for Quality Control. That really helps us out. And until the next time we have a game to talk about, my name is Justin McElroy. For Arthur Geese, thank you for listening to Polygon's Quality Control.